Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode of Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. If you would like to learn how to support this podcast, visit www.patreon.com/writingexcuses. Season 19, Episode 23. This is Writing Excuses.
A close reading on world building, tying it all together.
15 minutes long, because you're in a hurry.
And we're not that smart.
I'm Mary Robinette.
I'm Dong Lun.
I'm Erin.
And I have no idea how we can talk about A Memory Called Empire in 15 minutes. There are so many things that I learned just from reading this book, let alone putting together these episodes, just from reading this book. So many things that I learned.
And that is exactly what this episode is. This episode is us going back and recapping the tools that we learned so that you all have like this one spot that you can return to refresh your memory. We're going to start by kind of recapping the idea of scale, mm-hmm. like how to use scale and what some of the concrete tools that we can use to indicate scale to a reader. We gave you a lot of really good examples during that episode, but some of the actual tools that we are using are things like juxtaposition between two elements. We saw that in Memory Called Empire with the discussion of the vastness of the empire compared to the smallness of LaSalle. So juxtaposition is a really useful tool for indicating scale.
Mm-hmm. I like juxtaposition and recontextualization. Mm-hmm. One of the first times I ever saw 3D used well in a movie was the animated Monsters versus Aliens. And there is this scene in which we look at the little monster, and we zoom in on each person and then open the camera up and look back, and there's this giant robot marching across the back. And it communicated scale so brilliantly because as the camera moves, the context changes and changes again and changes again, and everything gets bigger.
It's the thing I talked about earlier about compression and expansion, right? It's this architectural concept of going in from a big space, you compress people into a small space and let them come back out into the big space, right? And we see that over and over again. We start broad, we condense down to LaSalle Station, we condense down to Mahit, the one person arriving on this ship, and then we expand back out into space, and then we go back into the spaceport, right? And so when you have somebody coming from this galactic scale and then disembarking into this gray, featureless airport lobby, right, that she ends up in, that I think is a thing that communicates the scale of this empire so effectively, because we're going from that huge broad thing to something very, very familiar, right? So when you're trying to communicate also very wild new concepts, giving us the familiar detail is going to help a lot too.
And scale is a tool that you can use not only to indicate like the vastness of an empire. When you're talking about world building, there's a bunch of different places that you wind up using scale. Some of those are scale of wealth and having a juxtaposition of those two things, you know, someone who is very wealthy against someone, you know, the poorest member of society. Those are ways to indicate kind of what some of the outer edges of the world that you've created are. And those are things that I think can be a lot of fun. You can also demonstrate that with the magic. You know, you've got a brand new magic user versus the scale of someone who's very experienced.
The old joke about Europeans in America saying, oh, wow, that's a long drive. And Americans in Europe saying, oh, wow, that's an old castle.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, one other thing about that is even when you're staying within one topic, within one region, if you're talking about wealth or scale of an empire or whatever it is think about multiple ways to get that across, right? Not just physical description, but the way we talked about the opening line of the book, the way she uses disembarkation there to remind us that there's a massive amount of bureaucracy here too, right? And so when you layer in these other details and other vectors of scale, I think that can give us a lot of extra context. So like in something like wealth, it's not just contrasting the two people, but also what are the things that the wealthy person takes for granted that will indicate that in different ways.
Exactly. You sort of took the words out of my mouth because I was just thinking a lot of times when you think about wealth, people think that it's all about money and stuff, which part of it is. But some of it's about the what you believe you can do, what you think can happen in a day, the scope of the world that it opens up for you if you have unlimited resources versus if you have little tiny ones. What is the thing that your character is worrying about? And both people worry. Rich people worry, poor people worry, but the worries are different.
Exactly.
And that's something that we saw in Memory Called Empire, the scale of power, the difference between Mahit and her one assistant and the emperor and all of the people that are surrounding him and the layers of people that you had to go through just to get to talk to him. And that again is like scale of power can be demonstrated by multiple different means. So let's also then talk about the use of language. And I suspect that we'll wind up talking about this a lot because we strangely like language.
Strange that, yeah.
So this is a tool that you can use. And we talked about a number of different aspects of that tool. We talked about some of the specific language choices that she was picking.
Some of the conlang stuff.
Yeah.
The long words that force us, the long, unfamiliarly polysyllabic words that force us to slow down and absorb the paragraph at a different pace.
And taking the opportunity for something like the naming scheme to introduce ways you're developing the character, right? The thing that is so interesting to me about how the language works is it builds the world in terms of, yes, they have these weird names in this culture, the number and the noun, but also it's an opportunity to show here's how Mahit, an outsider, relates to the naming scheme in this world because we have this example of the, I believe it's 36 all-terrain tundra vehicle. I can never quite remember the number. I hope that's correct. But, you know, that way assimilation works and the way cultures collide is written very clearly in how that works out.
I also think with language, one of the great things about using names is they're everywhere and we use them all the time. I think something that a trap that I've fallen into in the past is that you name the unusual, like you name the thing in your world that is like the big weird thing. But you forget that like people eat every day and sit every day and that those are the words that actually make up most of our lives. And making changes there actually can make a greater impact on your reader than what the big, you know, thing in the sky is called.
Well, that's done so effectively when she wears the word for bomb, right? Because suddenly this thing that wasn't in her imagination, wasn't in her possibility space, is the thing she has to directly confront as she's lying on the ground, listening to people to scream for help and then scream this other word, which she learns as bomb, right? And so the way language also communicates what is and isn't possible within the empire and within Mahit's experience of empire, it's just this masterful way of gesturing at the entire scope of the world and what the stakes are in this world.
One of the most useful tools I've found for opening my head to naming conventions and possibilities is looking at interpretations for original meanings of names of people I know, and then writing them down and trying to narrate a scene with them called that. You know, my name, Guardian Clothes Maker. Well, that's a much more heroic name than Howard Taylor, but still, it makes me rethink it. And as you start doing this with the names you're familiar with, you'll twig to all kinds of new possibilities for whatever it is that you're working on.
And one of the things about that that I just want to point out is that you were basically taking your name as we know it, these sounds, and then putting it back to original meaning. And what that implies is, of course, there are two languages. And one of the things that I will often see people do when they're creating worlds is that they have only one language system. Mm-hmm. Or that there's, even within that language system, that there's only one way of speaking it, and that there's no slang, there's no class variation in it. And that's something that you see hinted at. We didn't talk much about it in the episode, but that's something, that's a tool that you can use to make your world feel more expansive, is to think about the different languages that are in use and also the power structure related to those languages.
And explicitly, Mahit is a foreigner to this language. This is a second language for her, right? She's had to learn this, and we are learning it alongside of her. And, you know, one technique to really think about is when you want to do this big, expansive world, this unique culture, having that audience surrogate perspective is so, so useful, right? And this is a way that she's found to add a lot of depth to what can sometimes feel a little thin, because the audience surrogate sometimes doesn't have enough texture to themselves. But she gives this relationship that Mahit has to the language and learning the language and the culture of this world, that we can feel her presence as a full person while still getting all of the benefits of having that outsider perspective, so that she can just sometimes stop and explain, hey, here's what's going on with the names. Hey, here's how the language works. Hey, here's how the culture works.
And on the subject of outsider perspectives, I've got a question that I'm going to ask after our break.
Hey writers, are you thinking about learning a new language? I think exploring the world, experiencing other cultures, and being able to communicate with people outside your everyday experience lets you create richer, better stories. A great way to do that is with Rosetta Stone, a trusted expert for over 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered. They use an immersive technique which leads to fast language acquisition. It's an intuitive process that helps you really learn to speak, listen, and most of all, think in the language you're trying to learn. They also feature true accent speech recognition technology that gives you feedback on your pronunciation. It's like having a voice coach in your home. Learn at home or on the go with a desktop and mobile app that let you download and access lessons even when you're offline. And it's an amazing value. A lifetime membership gives you access to all 25 languages, including Spanish, French, Italian, German, Japanese, and, of course, Korean. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Writing Excuses listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Hello! This week, our thing of the week is a role-playing game called Pasión de las Pasiones, which is based on Mexican telenovelas. This is such a great example of how the mechanics of a role-playing game can tell a certain style of story that couldn't be told in any other way. This one has such a tight focus on that soap opera style of storytelling. And so instead of having attacks you can make or spells you can cast, this thing has special moves like express your feelings out loud, demand what you are owed, things like that that just help sell that idea. It's a really great game, and it's a lot of fun. So, once again, that is called Pasión de las Pasiones.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So Mahit is giving us, she's our every person, you know, she's grounding us so that we can ask questions about Texcalani culture. But Mahit herself has Imago technology embedded in her head. And that's weird. That's weird stuff. It, on the surface to me, it feels like, oh no, you're breaking the rule. You're taking the audience surrogate and you're making the audience surrogate weird.
Mm-hmm.
Why? How did Arcady get away with this?
I think by making it relatable, because one of the things that she does right at the beginning is tie it to experiences that are common. The feeling of being an outsider and being grateful that she had this guide with her. So tying that to a relatable experience, it's like the times when I have been in another country and I have been solo versus when I have had someone with me, how much easier it is to navigate when I have someone with me. And if the idea that I could have someone with me who was supplementing my knowledge so that I didn't look like a bumbling barbarian, like that would have been like, I would have liked that. I would still like that.
It's like every other spy movie where there's person making their way through cocktail party, and then there's the voice in the earpiece telling them, oh, that's so-and-so, and this is so-and-so, and adjust your glasses, the camera's off, mm-hmm. Except the Imago doesn't need to do that part.
Yeah. Right.
But this does bring us around to talking about what we talked about in our third episode, which was technology and identity, and the different ways that you can use those to make your world-building feel expansive and to ground the reader in different things. So some of it is what we're talking about is tying it to a familiar experience. But then there's this idea of identity and where a character sits within mm-hmm. the world that they are in.
And the asking of a big question.
Yeah.
One of the things that I love about genre fiction is that it asks questions that are difficult to ask outside of the genre. You still can. But for me, one of the things that A Memory Called Empire asks is, what is the line between human and non-human if we're not talking about genetics, we are talking about what's in your head? Where is that line?
What is too much technology, right?
Yeah.
And what is the role of, you know, it's a very relevant question for us these days, of what is the role of AI in our lives, right? You know, we all are using assistive devices in terms of our phones, in terms of our computers, to learn more, experience more, and enhance our natural knowledge of the world. How is that different from an Imago, and how is that different from a Cloudhook, and what's the difference between those two things, right? So one of the things I love is that she's using repetition to deepen the idea, right? Every time she hits on the same subject, she's coming at it from a different angle with different nuance. I kind of think of it as Mary Robinette, your yes, but, and no, and, but at a meta level, right? Mm-hmm. She's using that thing where she's returning to this concept of where's the line between what is technology and what is self? And then every time she hits it, she's asking a slightly different version of it and pushing past where she took us last time. And that is so cool.
Yeah. And it's, even if you don't have something in your world that fits into that category, I think that line between what is technology and what is not technology is so interesting. Like we're all wearing clothes. Clothing is technology, but nobody thinks about it as technology. I have glasses. My glasses are an assistive device. Nobody thinks about them as assistive devices anymore.
Put a camera in it, suddenly you're wearing technology.
Right. Mm. And so, like, what does your character think of as technology versus what does your character think of as just normal? Like, you don't think about your faucet as technology. Your faucet is just part of your life.
Yeah, it's like, what is the distinction, I would say, between like self and tool? Like where does your identity end and where do the things that you use to express that identity, to move through the world begin? Mm-hmm. And that can work for both technology and for magic. So either way, there's something that you're using in order to make your way through the world. And what I like is that sort of, as we've been saying, there's a slightly different relationship each time.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's because it's a different person. So it's a different identity using the same tool. Sometimes it's because, you know, it is a different tool being used by the same person. And by looking at those differences, each one gives you a different facet of understanding both the tool and the person using it.
Right.
Yeah. And also that person's, you know, because of that person's lens looking at that tool, like you learn so much about them. Like one of the scenes that I remember in Arcady's book is when they go to the neurosurgeon and there's a drawing of a prosthetic hand. And there's this moment where Mahit thinks, well, why is that contraband? Because in her world, it's not. And so I think that part of the thing you can also play with is like what are the things that your character finds abhorrent about a potential technology? And what are the things that they're like, why is anyone surprised that we have this?
Mm-hmm. When you ask these questions, there's a technique that I talk about in humor all the time that shares a name with something you should never do on social media, doubling down. Mm-hmm. Take the question and keep asking it deeper and deeper and deeper. Keep digging that hole because A Memory Called Empire is not the first science fiction book to talk about world cities. It's not the first science fiction book to question humanity or our role with technology. And yet, when Arcady broaches these subjects with us, I don't know which word is correct there, and I'm going to let it slide because what the salient point is, it feels fresh. Mm-hmm. She asks the questions well, and you don't have to be conversant with all of the science fiction out there in order to do this. It helps, but you have to double down and keep asking.
Well, I think the magic is in the connections, right? Mm-hmm. We've talked about these techniques in isolation, but she's not just doing one of these at a time. She's doing all of them at once, right? That sense of compression and expansion she's doing as we're, you know, also learning about the Imago technology, as we're also learning the language and the culture. And then we start to see how the technology intersects with our understanding of the culture through the epigraphs, through the poems, through people's reactions to things, right? So language, identity, culture, physical spaces, bureaucratic spaces, all of these things she's interweaving in such a beautiful way, right? And so Howard makes a great point, which is, all of these things are pulled from other sources. It's easy for me to go through it and say, oh, this is like Anne Leckie. Oh, this is like Star Wars. Oh, this is like this or that. You can do that with any work of fiction. The beauty of fiction is how you weave those things together to be their own distinct portrait. And, you know, as we're talking about here, being able to tie these different techniques together and switch it up from beat to beat to beat is going to be the thing that makes your fiction feel rich and exciting and fresh.
And it's also not something that's limited to science fiction or fantasy. These kinds of things are things that you can do with a modern day thing, someone and their relationship to their cell phone versus someone else who's like, why are you attached to that device at all times? So looking at those as ways that they reveal the character and reveal the character's relationship to society is something that you can do, I think, and should be doing kind of as this tool to make things feel more expansive and grounded. I'm going to mention a real quick thing that occurred to me as you were talking. Again, when you think about technology, it doesn't have to be complicated. I was recently talking to a medievalist who talked about the introduction of the fork. And up to that point, everybody was like knife and spoon. And when the fork got introduced, people were like, what is this? You are being so hoity-toity, and this is, you know. And there was a woman who had her forks, and she was very proud of them, and she died of plague, and everyone was like, well, it was because she had forks.
Well, and also the difference between one culture having forks and one culture having chopsticks, yeah. Right? The difference in how you eat, what you eat, you know, how polite society operates, all of that is rooted in this technological device and this difference.
Also, like, it's so funny how technology, like, comes around again.
Yeah.
We talked about forks. I mean, we're not going to get rid of forks, though, you never know. But like
the
thinking
day
about
this fork is coming.
Oh, Reese. But I think it would be, I'm thinking about letters. Like I'm thinking about the way that like letters to emails, like there was a period of time in which people would be like, why would you write when you could call? Mm-hmm. And now people say, why are you calling me? This could have been an email.
Yeah.
And the fact that the technology has changed, but the question between whether or not I want to read your words or hear them continues to go. And maybe it will take another iteration in another generation.
Why are you replying? Why are you replying to my post when all you really needed to do was click on the 100 and the thumbs up emojis?
Yes, exactly. Because
that's all you said.
Well, yeah. And this circles back to Mary Called Empire because she's imagined a world where emails are physical objects that are sealed with wax and sent around, right? And there's such a deliberateness to that choice of, and that tells me so much about this culture that they have email. They just think it's crass to use. So they send each other physical memory sticks instead.
Physical memory sticks that are encoded with poetry.
Yes, exactly.
Like,
exactly.
Oh my goodness. So speaking of encoding, we are going to encode a little bit of homework for you. And the homework is find a piece of world building that you love and come up with a different way to use it in another part of your work in progress. This has been Writing Excuses. You're out of excuses. Now go write. Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. For this episode, your hosts were Mary Robinette Kowal, Dongwon Song, Aaron Roberts, and Howard Taylor. This episode was engineered by Marshall Carr Jr., mastered by Alex Jackson, and produced by Emma Reynolds. For more information, visit writingexcuses.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too. Like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.